Had enough of the excuse-making, lack of accountability, and psychobabble? Then you're in the right place. You're listening to the Voice of Reason, and we're here to help you reconnect with your inner common sense. Now, here's the host of the Voice of Reason, Deneen Minette.
Hello, everybody. It's Deneen Minette, and I am back with the Voice of Reason. Happy Tuesday. I think last week at the end of my show, I was mentioning that I would see you all again on Thursday, and I apologize for that. I was all messed up. Anyway, so welcome back to the Voice of Reason. We've got a few things I'd like to talk about today, a few issues that are in the media that I think are important for us to tackle, that I think are very significant and are playing a role in the discussions that are going on not only in the media, but also around some of the water coolers and kitchen tables. Once again, I am Deneen Minette. I am the author of Ultimate Betrayal, Recognizing, Uncovering, and Dealing with Infidelity, as well as Messages for Joey, a book I penned for my daughter, explaining everything that I think is really important for girls coming of age to know in terms of life, love, money, self, and relationships. So in any event, that's me. I have a bachelor's degree in social welfare and a law degree from Hastings, and I've been kind of working in this criminal justice field, investigative field, for about 24 years. So all of that information and knowledge together has made me believe that I know what I'm talking about. So hopefully you think so as well. So let's get started with a story that is actually kind of personal to me, that has been trending both on social media as well as being discussed in the media nationally now. This thing has taken on legs and has spread all over the place. And I was actually following it as it was happening before it became a big news story. And that is this situation with the book club that was essentially kicked off of the Napa Valley Wine Train, who they were taking their annual excursion every year. Apparently, they go on a trip, one of their big end-of-the-year celebrations. And there were 11 women, mostly African-American women, not all, but mostly, who booked a trip on the Napa Valley Wine Train last November. For those of you who aren't familiar with what that is, it's kind of a, you know, hoity-toity, classy excursion that people take through wine country, and there's usually about six or seven cars, and people taste wine throughout the trip. It's very, very nice. I've never been on it, but I've read a lot about it. I know a lot of people that have, and they say it's a very, very nice experience, and it lasts for several hours, and it's pretty pricey, anywhere between $150 to $200 for this experience. And the leader of the book club, her name is Lisa Johnson, and she's actually a personal friend of mine. Her and I have gone to authors' conferences over the past maybe 8 or 9 years in San Francisco, and so I know her personally, and she runs a book club, and I'm Facebook friends with her. So last weekend, she started posting on Facebook about this trip, and they were on their way, and she had all of the women taking pictures. These are all professional women. These are all educated and you know, working women, upscale, you know, very just together group of women. They're not just a bunch of people who don't have any idea what they're supposed to be doing or where they're supposed to be going or whatever. These are some upscale, educated women. In any event, they decided to have their annual book discussion on the Napa Valley Wine Train, and they made their reservations, like I indicated, last November, and they reportedly worked very closely with the reservationist, who they informed this was going to be a large party. It actually started off being 16 women, but through the process of, you know, as time went on, people dropped off. So it ended up being just the 11 of them. And they worked very closely with the reservationist, according to Lisa, to make sure that they understood that they were going to be discussing their book on the train, and that they were, you know, they're talkative and they're going to be having a good time. So that was known reportedly from the beginning. And I was watching as they were posting the pictures of them getting on the train, and then all of a sudden it went bad. And she started posting all of these things about, I can't believe that somebody has complained about us making noise. We're not making noise. We're just laughing and having a conversation. We're not drinking, or we're not intoxicated. We're just having fun. And then I'm just following the posts. And next thing you know, there's a picture of her and the other women from the book group, one of them 85-year-old great-grandma, are standing on the side of the railroad tracks and they're police there. And I'm thinking, how did this go bad? What on earth happened? So in any event, what started off as a joyous ride through wine country, and this was last Saturday afternoon, it turned into a humiliating experience for these women. And, you know, who said that they were basically booted off the train for laughing and talking too loud. And the accounts and pictures of the episode have been spread, like I said, across social media, and they spawned the hashtag, Laughing While Black. And the women, you know, were involved. They've questioned whether they were treated differently. And would they be treated differently if they had not been African American? So they're wondering maybe if perhaps this may be a race thing. And Lisa Johnson was quoted in one of our local papers as saying it was humiliating. I'm really offended, to be quite honest. She's a 47-year-old woman who runs the book club. And she says, I felt like it was a racist attack on us. And I feel like we were being singled out. Now, there were various accounts going back and forth. A lot of people started posting on Yelp, even a person who was on the train, who I haven't heard come forth and speak in the media, but this person on the train said that she was also, you know, amazed that these women were walked off the train. They were essentially walked from the back car all the way through all of the other train cars until they were put off the train. And that's what they said was absolutely humiliating. The women have since been given a full refund by the train company, and they were initially saying they wanted an apology. They were wanted a public apology. And, that wasn't quite forthcoming. That didn't quite happen from the beginning. And in a statement on Sunday, the following day, from the Napa Valley Wine Train spokesperson, her name is Kira DeWitt, she said the company received complaints from several parties in the same car, and after three attempts from staff requesting that the group keep the noise to an acceptable level, they were removed from the train, and they were offered transportation back to the station in Napa. And she says that if guests are being severely disruptive, that's when they discuss whether or not that guest or that party should be removed. And she says, you know, we don't make that judgment unless we receive a complaint from the people around them. And she added that these removals are actually not an uncommon occurrence, but she did not really have immediate information on the average number per year of people that are actually put off the train, and that it's not unusual for the police to be called. And then later on in the same, you know, the Napa Valley Wine Train's Facebook account posted something which was actually later taken down in response to all of the phone calls and Yelp reviews and emails and just blowing up hashtags and tweets and all of these things. They came out with a response on Sunday evening to this growing controversy, and they posted a message which said, following verbal and physical abuse towards other guests and staff, it was necessary to get our police involved. When these celebrations impact our other guests, we do intervene. So that was the spin that they were putting on it on Sunday. That post was taken down because this was the first account, first anyone ever heard of any physical or verbal abuse, anybody getting beat up. So that was astonishing. When I first read that was astonishing. So Lisa's been doing the talk circuit. She's been being interviewed on a lot of news stations and by a lot of outlets. In fact, I think she's on MSNBC this morning. And I was listening to her on the radio earlier today, and she was disputing a lot of the things that are being circulated in the media. A lot of the stories, which number one, she's saying, no, we were not asked several times to be quiet. She says that when they were in the station before the train left, they were being, you know, ruckus and rambunctious and boisterous and talking and laughing and celebrating as a group of people, women, bachelorette, whatever, wedding party, whatever. That they were having a good time, and that somebody came over and the maitre d' came over and asked them, you know, you're going to need to keep it down. And so they were a little bit kind of taken aback, but they realized, okay, well, maybe we ought to just keep it down. Maybe people are just not in the mood to hear our conversation. And so basically they said, okay, you know, we'll keep it down. She did say that ruined the mood quite a bit, but that they understood, and that was the only time anyone ever said anything to them. So she said later they got on the train, and they had been riding the train for a good 40 minutes, and they had been talking amongst themselves, not you know, too loudly or anything, but just basically having conversations. But that the way that the train car was set out, they were not going to be able to talk directly to each other because I guess they were kind of in an L shape and there were two groups of ladies at four tables and then the others were stretched out. I mean, at two tables that seated four and then the rest were stretched out along the window. So they kind of had to talk in order to communicate as they were discussing their book. So she says that, you know, they weren't having much of a loud conversation, but the other people that were in the car were joining in, taking pictures with them, asking about the book they were reading, conversating with them, and just having a really good time. Nobody was having a problem. And that somebody said something, one of the other passengers said something that they found to be really funny, and they all erupted in laughter. Ha, 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 ha. Which was at that point that the maitre d' came over again and said, oh no, this is not going to work. You guys have got to go. And that they were stunned. And then it just spiraled out of control from there. In which, you know, when she informed them they needed to get off the train and they were very upset and the maitre d' left. And then when she came back, they said, you know what? We don't want to get off this train. We don't have anywhere to go. We're in the middle of nowhere and we don't have our vehicles. And the maitre d' informed them, oh no, you're going to be getting off the train and I'm going to have the police come on and escort you off at the next stop. And we will, you know, this sounds like a customer service situation, but you're getting off this train. And sure enough, at the next stop, they were marched from the back of the train all the way to the front of the train and put off, and the police were standing there waiting. And there has been a difference of opinion about what people are thinking and what people are feeling about how this has played out. Some people are saying, you know what, they're pulling the race card, and that's not okay. You know, any loud group of people is going to get put off the train, and it shouldn't, you know, it doesn't matter what color you are. You could be whatever. And chances are they probably were being loud and boisterous. And, you know, that's it's just the way that it is. So a lot of people are saying this is, you know, why are you bringing race into this? This has nothing to do with race. This is probably you acting like a bunch of drunks and going on and on. And well, why is race always an issue? Why does it have to be a black thing? Maybe you were just loud and obnoxious the way that these train cars operate. People are very quiet and very subdued, and it's a very classy atmosphere. And for a bunch of loud black women to get on there, as you know, they can be loud black women. You know how that is. You know, why are you blaming anybody else for your circumstance? Why are you blaming anybody else for what happened? Which is really interesting, but you know, nobody who else was on the train has spoken up and said what happened. So lo and behold, Sam Singer, who is the spokesperson for the Wine Train, went on the radio this morning and publicly, I heard him with my own ears, acknowledged that every single thing that Lisa Johnson said in her account of what happened on that Wine Train is absolutely true. That the women were not asked multiple times to quiet down, that there were not multiple complaints, there was only one complaint from one person, that it was completely wrong for them to have been marched from the rear of the train to the front of the train, and that was completely and totally insensitive, and that they've apologized, they have offered another train ride for this group of women and up to 50 of their friends, that they've completely fallen on the sword on this. And this is the same group, the same folks that came out on Sunday saying that these women beat them up. I mean, basically beat them up, curse them out, whatever. But it's just amazing how the tide of a story can change in just 48 hours where these women are being crucified and wronged by a bunch of people that weren't there. And now the spokesperson for the train has come out and said, yeah, we need to do some training. Yeah, we've done our investigation. Yeah, they did talk to the ticketing agent at the beginning and explain that they were going to be a group that was going to need to talk loudly, that they were well aware they should have been seated in a car with other people that also were in large parties and it would have been okay. But basically said, yeah, everything they're saying is true. And what makes it even worse is that the police when they arrived, police officials have been interviewed and they've said that, wow, this has never happened before. We've never been called to the train before to escort people back to their cars. This has never happened, which means the entire statement about this happens all the time, we call the police often as though this is a policy, the police were saying they were completely surprised. So that leads you to wonder, Because I truly am not somebody who is always saying everything happens because of race. I'm someone who's not, you know, the first person to throw that out there. And I try and step back and look at the bigger picture. But when this woman's account and all of the other women's is completely discounted, discredited by people who weren't even there. And then the spokesperson gets on and says, yeah, actually, you know what? Everything she's saying is true. And yet people still called in to the radio station afterwards saying, oh, he's just making that up. The women did do what they're accused of doing. And he's just saying that because he doesn't want to get sued. But when you don't want to get sued, why would you admit fault to something? If anything, that would open you up for a lawsuit. If anything, that would make you more liable and have a bigger payout. That's basically the same thing as opening up your purse and writing a check. So, you know, I just think that whole situation as it's evolving is extremely interesting. I think that it's just really the spin that people put on things and their own perceptions and their own realities and their own place of privilege comes into play when they're evaluating a situation that they didn't see, that they weren't there for, and they only know about what the media is putting out. And yet, even when the so-called truth comes out, people still want to discount that because they cannot allow these women to have had this experience. Was it racial? I don't know. But I tell you what, it was unprofessional, it was actionable, and I really hope that the Napa Wine Train gets their act together. We'll be right back.
Welcome back to The Voice of Reason. Here's Deneen Minette.
Welcome back. It's Deneen Minette for our next segment on The Voice of Reason. And I'm going to change gears a little bit here. Back to school is starting for a lot of youngsters this week. And so I kind of wanted to touch on something that I read about a week and a half ago in the paper and online and social media that I think is important. And I think that since I am a parent, I have two adult children now, a 22 and a 20-year-old, which is really weird because I swear I just brought each of them home from the hospital. But in any event, and I've got a 10-year-old daughter. So I'm always really interested in talking about parenting and things that I think are essential and important as we raise our kids to be young adults. So whenever I get an opportunity to bring up something that has to do with that, like I said, I wrote a book for my daughter about things I think she needs to know. I like to, you know, run my mouth and give my 2 cents, which usually turns into 25 cents, but, you know. So what I think was an important story that I came across a little over a week ago was a story about Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison. And, you know, the issue with him is that he has 2 sons, and they were given trophies, participation trophies. And so, you know, it just didn't set right with him. He took to Instagram a little over a week ago to say that he was returning the 2 awards. His 2 sons, James III and Henry, had received at a local athletics event, and it was run, actually, it was a football event that was run by a former Steelers quarterback, Charlie Batch. And the boys received trophies for participating in the event, and their dad, well, he wasn't feeling it. Wasn't interested. Mr. Harrison said, "No, I'm returning these trophies. They didn't deserve them. I don't want them to have them, and I'm giving them back." And he basically wrote on Instagram that he was very proud of his 2 boys, and both the boys are at elementary school. But basically, he said these trophies will be given back until they earn a real trophy. His exact words were, "quote I came home to find out that my boys received 2 trophies for nothing." Participation trophies, he said. "While I'm very proud of my boys for everything they do and will encourage them till the day I die, these trophies will be given back until they earn a real trophy. I'm sorry. I'm not sorry for believing that everything in life should be earned, and I'm not about to raise 2 boys to be men by making them believe that they are entitled to something just because they tried their best. 'Cause sometimes your best is just not enough. And that should drive you to want to do better, not cry and whine until somebody gives you something to shut you up and keep you happy." And then he did the hashtag Harrison Family Values. Well, I tell you, that erupted an entire debate on social media. The 37-year-old says he doesn't want his sons to feel entitled. He added that because sometimes your best is just not enough. And once again, that should drive you to do better. That was his main contention. And many people are upset about that. You know, they're feeling as though, hey, you should reward effort. We should we should promote our kids' confidence and self-esteem and the fact that they actually got out there and tried and gave it their best. And that basically taking that away from his children or from any children is not a good idea. It's something that's really just shouldn't happen. You should promote positive effort. You should encourage your kids to work harder. You should give them rewards along the way, incentives to continue trying, and that these were in fact incentives, and that was just kind of wrong. So I don't know, maybe a participation ribbon instead of a trophy. I don't know how he would have feel about that, because I know my kids, they do, you know, they get ribbons. My daughter runs track and she'll get a ribbon instead of a trophy. Maybe a trophy should be reserved for something that's really, really great, but maybe a good compromise would be everybody gets a participation ribbon. I don't know. But that brings to question the issue of, are we giving our kids too much, or are we taking away too little? Or maybe both. Maybe we're both giving them too much and taking away too little. Those people who, there's many that agree with the trophy for participation, they say pretty much that the idea of a participatory trophy is not to make everyone a winner, but rather to acknowledge that the child put in the time and the effort to provide a memento of the experience for them. You know, and they feel like having a child return a trophy compounds the idea that only being the best is good enough, when in fact giving one's best should be valued as well. I mean, after all, what could possibly be wrong with celebrating a kid's efforts? So, you know, a lot of people feel as though, you know, just because you aren't the best, that doesn't mean that you're not worthy of recognition. That kind of makes everyone believe that they need to be the best at everything. And perhaps, I don't know, maybe that's putting too much pressure on children. Maybe that's making children feel as though if they're not perfect, if they don't get it all right, get all the answers right, do everything right, then they're less than. And that maybe that's not a good thing. Maybe that kind of brings kids down, that brings their self-esteem down and makes them feel not as good about themselves and makes them more likely to quit or give up. So what basically could possibly be wrong with celebrating a kid's efforts? Why wouldn't a parent or an organization want to at least embrace and celebrate a kid's efforts? Is that so wrong? Well, the opponents of this trophy for every kid feel that it fosters narcissism. And they feel like if you tell a kid they're wonderful and that, you know, that they're great and that they're awesome, then they believe you. And that it just confirms their belief that it's not about healthy self-esteem, but it's more about narcissism. That the world revolves around them, and no matter what they put out, as long as they put anything out, that should be good enough. Children whose parents overvalued them, studies have shown, were more likely to develop narcissistic traits, such as superiority and entitlement. Which is interesting. Superiority and entitlement. I don't know. I've preached on this topic for many, many weeks about entitlement and people feeling entitlement. These are two qualities which aren't necessarily going to benefit our kids when the going gets tough. The feeling of I'm better than everybody else and I am entitled to a reward at every turn. I'm entitled to being acknowledged. I'm entitled to, you know, some type of treat, you know, like we're training dogs. You give them a treat every time they do something good. So, and additionally, just rewarding effort doesn't give our kids room to make mistakes and learn from those mistakes. So, you know, that's also a really good point. It's that basically saying that if I reward every little thing you do, whether it's right or wrong, then you're not going to learn from the fact that you made a mistake. So what good does it do to receive a trophy at the end of a game or at the end of a season where you just kind of screwed up in every game or at every match or in every event? You didn't really practice hard, but you showed up and, you know, you're getting a trophy anyway. So what is the incentive to improve? What is the incentive to make things better? You know, it's fine to say, you know, hey, you didn't go to all the games. You didn't practice, you know, soccer. You didn't practice well enough. And that other kid over there, you know, he or she really worked hard and they really did well and they kind of deserve this trophy. And you need to go over there and congratulate him or her. And you need to get back in the gym, or you need to get back on the field or on the track or in the pool or whatever it is you're doing. I mean, what's wrong with basically saying, you didn't quite put in the effort that you needed to have put in. And the result of that is you don't get the trophy. Is that such a horrible thing? And in fact, not only are you not going to get it, you need to go over there and say, good job, Bob, or great job, Sally. You know, I see what the results of hard work are, and I congratulate you because you worked harder than I did. I mean, is that like so wrong? I don't know. I really do think that we would rather have kids that realize that, you know, they can make mistakes and move on and improve on what they did wrong rather than have them find out later that everybody in life is not going to give them a trophy. I mean, I think it's a really important lesson that we kind of impress upon our kids now. I think it's really important for them to understand that hey, I'm not going to get everything. I'm not going to get everything just because I showed up. I made a lot of mistakes, and the only way that I'm going to be rewarded by getting paid more or by getting the promotion or later in life is by getting back to the drawing board, pushing my sleeves up, and working harder. And until we get to that realization that we need to kind of push our kids to do those things, this is going to keep happening. And the level of expectation is going to keep dropping to where I don't have to be good. I just have to show up. I don't have to excel. I just have to put on my cleats and sit on the bench. I mean, hey, me personally, I'm not okay with that. I'm not okay with the everybody gets a trophy way of looking at things. I really think people need to be rewarded for hard work. And that kind of comes down to the fact that in our culture now, there is no sense of deferred gratification. There is no sense of waiting for what's important. There is no sense of looking forward to working hard and putting off the now factor for later, for an appropriate time, for an appropriate venue, for at a time that I have earned this reward. There's no lack of deferred gratification. Just look at the way our kids' lives are structured now. They have 24-hour cartoon channels. 24 hours. I don't know about you, but I can remember getting up early on Saturday morning just so I could watch all of the cartoons before that show with the black background and those two old white guys sat around that came on at 11 o'clock. I don't even know what it was. What, Face the Nation? I have no idea. I just know that I needed to get all of my cartoon watching in before those two old dudes showed up, because by then that meant it was absolutely over, no more fun, and nothing else on TV. So I remember getting up at about 6 o'clock in the morning so I could catch Roadrunner, I could catch Yogi Bear, I could catch Scooby-Doo, and all of those things that I had waited all week for, because we didn't have that, you know, every single day 24-hour thing going on. We had to defer our reward for the weekend, and if I was on punishment, then I couldn't even get that. If I was on punishment, I couldn't even get my cartoon Saturday morning because I was on TV restriction. So that was kind of the motivating factor for me to behave myself during the week so that I could get rewarded for my wonderful, hardworking, good behavior week, and I'd be able to see my cartoon Saturday morning. Well, that doesn't happen anymore. Now, you know, these it's just the way that it is. And what about the after-school specials? Does anybody remember the after-school specials? Those were such a big deal. I mean, we talked about it all day at school. They advertised for those for months. You couldn't wait to get home to watch the after school special. Not anymore. Now they've got Disney Channel. They've got Nick. I mean, hell, they got Netflix, and you can DVR whatever you want. You don't have to wait with anticipation for the reward of that exciting thing that's coming. Everything is just at the moment. Everything is just, you know, at your fingertips. Ready to go at all times. I'm telling you, this deferred gratification or lack thereof, it's ruining our kids. Ruining. Anyway, we'll pick this up again after the break.
And now back to Deneen Minette for more of the Voice of Reason on TalkZone.com.
Welcome back. It's Deneen Minette, Voice of Reason. And when we took off, we were talking briefly about Pittsburgh Steelers linebacker James Harrison's decision to give his son's trophies back, participation trophies, and the fact that he doesn't feel like they earned them. He doesn't think that they did anything to deserve them and that they hadn't worked hard enough yet and that they would get a reward when they worked hard enough. And that kind of took me into the entire deferred gratification thing and how it just these kids today, not only these kids, adults as well, but I'm focusing mainly on the kids because they're coming up and we're still molding them, how they just have no sense of deferred gratification. And really, whose fault is that? And I'm just, you know, thinking about all of the things that are just at your fingertips that are different from when we were children. The whole fact that I can remember having to wait for my song to come on the radio. You just sat by the radio waiting for your song. And then if you had your little cassette recorder out, you hurried up and tried to record it real fast so that you could hear it as many times as you wanted to. Because if you missed your song, there's no telling when it would come on again. But we don't have that today. We've got the iPods. You've got streaming. You don't have to wait for anything. It's right there at your fingertips. These kids have whatever they want. And because of that, they kind of live in a bubble, quite frankly, having no reason to deal with news or outside information. You completely control what's on your television. You completely control your viewing by watching your Netflix series and doing all of these things that completely control your visual media input. You get everything that you need at your fingertips according to what you want or don't want to see. And you don't have to listen to the radio and hear the news and hear all the things that are going on because you get to just listen to the songs that you've downloaded and have on your iPod, and you can just listen to all your favorites. You don't have to ever go outside of your bubble. And that's a shame. That's a shame because you miss out on so much. You miss out on so much of life and of others' experiences because you're living in a bubble. And there's no reason to have to wait for anything or to get through the things that you don't want to see or hear to get to what you're looking for. Christmas, Lord. When we were kids, we got presents for Christmas and our birthday. Now, you know, kids get presents all the time. I mean, we had to wait. We had to wait for school clothes. We had to wait for school shoes. You know, you had to wait for these to wear out. And, you know, it just, I don't know. Maybe I was raised different. Maybe I was raised on a barn. Who knows? I don't know. But the fact of the matter is that there's no waiting going on. There's no sense of deferred gratification. There's no putting things off. There's no waiting for your friends to come home to play because now you've got Xbox Connect and you got the Candy Crush and the iPod Touch. Always somebody available or something available to play with. You don't have to hope that Chrissy is not on punishment so she can come out and play. You don't need to even worry about Chrissy. You don't even need to worry about any of your friends because all you need to do is push a button and your friend pops up. I friend you just by looking at your pictures and knowing that we know some people in common, and it doesn't matter if you're a mass murderer, whatever, we're friends because, you know, you're also friends with two other people I know and, you know, we went to the same preschool and we're friends. Don't need to put any effort into it. We are friends. And I don't need to even hang out with you because I can just periscope you in. You know, I can just record you and bring you with me. You don't need to get up and get dressed and come hang out with me. No, no, no. That stuff is for old folks. I can periscope you into the room. I never even have to get out of bed to socialize with my friends. You know, I don't have to wait and hold in information all day to share with you. I can just click share and you know everything you need to know about what's going on in my world or my day. So we don't need to communicate. We don't need to do anything. We don't need to expand our mind. I mean, Jesus, does anybody have a dictionary in their home anymore? How about the encyclopedia? We had the whole World Book Encyclopedia and other people, you know, the library at school, the whole Encyclopedia Britannica. Remember that thing? That book? Good Lord. Are they still in business or did they go to .com? I don't know. Anyway, you actually had to pick up the book and look at the thesaurus and go to a library. You actually had to walk in and find your book in that thing. What was it called? The Dewey Decimal System? Remember that thing? The little cards that you pulled out, Dewey Decimal, and you had to actually walk over and find the book on the shelf. I mean, yeah, it was an inconvenience, but it taught you skills. It taught you how to do things. And, you know, you had to write everything. You had to have handwriting. Everything, all of these things that did not come easy, they all taught you skills, whether they were interpersonal, organizational, academic. Whatever it was, research, they taught you skills. But, I mean, do we even need these skills anymore? Why do I need to look in a dictionary if I can go to dictionary.com? So what's the point? I think it makes us mentally lazy, quite frankly. And I think that it puts us in a position where we just don't have to work hard to get what we want. We don't have to work hard. We get a trophy you know, as long as we looked up the word, what difference does it make what efforts we had to go through to do it? You know, I'm just fine. I don't need to make any friends. I've got, you know, 2,000 friends. So what do I need? I don't care that I don't even know anything about them. And I know their birthdays. And isn't that all that matters? Yeah, okay. So in any event, I just feel like everything comes so easy now, but it does come with a price. And advancing technology and society, yeah, we're doing that. But it's also diminishing our skill set and our work ethic. It's diminishing our ability to get out there and figure out how to get things done. The bar is just set so low now. The fact that showing up is all you need to do to be rewarded. The fact that I have talked about numerous times, the whole kindergarten and preschool graduation thing. Oh, that gets under my skin. I just don't get it. The bar is just so low. And I mean, honestly, it's not the kids' fault. I mean, how do we get here? It is not their fault. They didn't create and bring these video games into their lives. They didn't create the cell phone and the cable and what runs. This is the adults. We did this in our effort to make things easier for our kids. We, as parents, became a bunch of wimps. We don't want to see them upset. We don't want to see them crying and lacking and not having what the other kids have. We don't want to see them alone and unoccupied and bothering us, you know. We don't want them, you know, to be staying up too late. We don't want their feelings hurt. So, you know, we just want to make sure they're always occupied. They have everything at their fingertips. You know, the kids don't buy the trophies. We do. We are the ones that decided that, you know, we don't want the kids to be upset. We created the technology that has honestly wussified our kids. We are the ones that canceled dodgeball. You know, we're the ones that said, oh, no, dodgeball hurts people's feelings. No, can't do that. You know, with valedictorians, no. Can't have valedictorians. It makes the other kids feel bad. You know, no award for perfect attendance. No, you know, that kid over there, you know, she was sick and it's not fair for her or him. You know, you were sick. Why should you be penalized because you were sick? I don't think it's about being penalized because you were sick. I don't think it's about being penalized because you didn't score the most goals. I don't think it's about being penalized because you weren't the best. I think it is being acknowledged because you were. I think it is being uplifted and encouraged because you set a goal and you made it. So why should the other people that didn't get their act together for whatever reason, maybe not any fault of their own, why should they be in a position to take away from those who did? You know, we as adults have created these 24-hour distractions. We refuse to set limits. We feel that whatever you're doing is fine. Just do it, you know. Whatever it is you want to do, whatever you feel, however you want to be, you know, you just get rewarded for nothing. And that's fine. Just fine. As long as at the end of the day, you feel good. The world revolves around you. The world revolves around your comfort level. And we have basically told people that it's okay to set yourself on fire to keep other people warm because they need to feel good. And if you are going to set yourself on fire in order for them to be able to feel good about themselves, then that is an okay thing to do. And that's just not okay. It's absolutely not okay. The whole thing I was talking about last week with the whole Donald Trump thing, and we're in a position where we're just basically celebrating somebody who just whatever they feel comfortable doing and saying is just okay. You know, to hell with decorum. We've modeled this behavior. We've modeled it for our children. And we're modeling it for the rest of the world that whatever we feel, we're going to say, we're going to do. There's no rules. There's no standards. It just doesn't matter what the standards and the rules are. You know, we've got our young girls sadly thinking that it's somebody else's responsibility to keep them safe. Other people have to teach their boys not to rape in order for me to be okay. I personally am not okay with that entire philosophy that the world revolves around you. I can't leave my safety or my daughter's safety in the hands of some other parent teaching their son what not to do. It's all about self-empowerment and making decisions for yourself. And the world does not revolve around you. It's not about everybody being in a position to make you feel safe, to make you feel good, to make you feel okay about yourself. It's not up for other people. It's not their responsibility for you to feel good about yourself. I'm not going to share my trophy because it makes you feel better. I'm not going to set myself on fire so that you can be warm. It's just not okay. And it takes individual parents to take a stand on this, to unplug, to say no, to not set the bar according to what other parents are doing. And sometimes you just need to give the trophy back. You didn't earn it. You didn't work hard for it. It's not going to be a reward for you because you didn't put in the effort. Other people's kids did. Other families did. Other people made sacrifices. You just didn't get it done for whatever reason. You didn't get it done. Parents, sometimes we gotta give the trophy back. We'll be back after this.
You're listening to the Voice of Reason on TalkZone.com. Here's your host, Deneen Minette.
Welcome back. It's Deneen Minette, and we are shifting into our infidelity segment of the show. Every week I do a little piece on infidelity. I was trying to give myself a little bit more time this week because the question is kind of long, so I'm going to just jump right into it. And it's perfect because with this entire Ashley Madison thing that's going on, and they're saying that for divorce attorneys, it's like Christmas in August because all as this information is coming out about all of these people, and it's not so much that they signed up for the service, but all of the different things, the things that people are asking for and requesting in their profiles, these salacious details of what they want to do to their sexual partners and what they're looking for. All of this stuff has come out, and it's just destroying relationships. So, you know, this is just perfect timing that the question that I have this week is something that I think would really be helpful to a lot of people who are now suddenly and unsuspectingly dealing with infidelity in their relationships. But this week's question comes from Teresa, and she says, my sister found out her husband has been having an affair with a gal that he met online, which, like I said, this is perfect. Sounds just like some Ashley Madison type thing. She goes from angry to normal to wanting to beat the crap out of him all within the span of a single day. I never know what she's going to do or say next. She's all over the place emotionally, and I'm really getting concerned. They've been married for 20 years, so of course she's super depressed. I kind of hope they get a divorce because he doesn't deserve her. But how do you suggest that I help her? Well, first off, I need you to, the entire thing, I hope that they get a divorce because he doesn't deserve her. I think you need to take that out of your verbiage. Take that out of your literary library. Take that out of your mouth. Do not say that to her again. There's nothing worse than people throwing in their two cents about what you need to do with your marriage. I mean, unless this person is beating the crap out of you and put you in the hospital, you kind of need to stay in your lane when it comes to this type of an issue. People make their own decisions for their own reasons. They stick it out or they walk away. But either way, they need to have your love and your support and your ear. They don't need your judgment. They don't need your finger wagging. And, you know, they don't really need your suggestion unless it's asked for. So unless you want her to pull away and completely not use you as someone to help her get through this painful situation, and unless you're ready to be removed from her support system, you need to keep your opinion about whether she needs to be divorced to yourself unless she specifically asks you, should I divorce him? Other than that, you just need to be there to help support her during this horrible time and keep your opinion to yourself. So I want to go through the several stages that people go through with when they have discovered that their partner, their spouse has cheated on them. And there are about 9 different phases that a person goes through. And I'm really hoping that we can get through all of them today because I think it's really important. And how you're saying that you just don't know what she's going to do from one day to the next and she's up and down. You know, I just really think that it's important for you as well as her to know exactly what to expect and how these things play out, how it plays out over the next few days, months, weeks, years. The first phase is the initial shock. And this is the phase when you're just simply in disbelief. You cannot comprehend that your spouse was physically or emotionally intimate with someone else other than yourself. And this is when you start piecing the puzzle pieces together and you realize that so much of your reality was actually a lie. It's like your parents coming in and saying, guess what? You know, you're 25, but you were adopted and we found you on a bus bench and we're not really your parents, but we'll help you, we'll introduce you to the people that are. The floor falls out from under you. Everything that you knew to be true is not true anymore. And that is a very, very confusing, painful, just amazingly frustrating situation because you just don't know what's what and who's who. And that's the very beginning. I'm not really sure how far out Teresa's sister is from the affair, but if she's still in the initial shock phase or if she's moved on, but that phase lasts quite a while because it's during this phase that you're just simply in a fog while you're trying to make sense of what's going on and trying to figure out if this is all some sort of bad dream. You're just like, is this really happening? Am I really going through this? Is this real? Did this really happen? It's all just a big, you're just in a fog and you stay in that fog sometimes for quite some time. So it can be very frustrating. The next phase is the rage phase. And, you know, cause like you said, she goes from normal to wanting to beat the crap out of him in the span of a day. In the rage phase, you begin to realize that this is actually happening and that it's not some cruel joke. And during this phase, you become physically ill quite often and you find that you're simply unable to get out of bed, to go to work, to interact with other people in your world. You're not yourself. You're sick to your stomach. You either start overeating or you stop eating. And it's not uncommon for you to have episodes of crying, of throwing things, of breaking objects, of screaming, of fighting, and generally behaving like way out of control. You can't see past the anger at this phase, and you may choose to express your rage in ways that are dangerous, unhealthy, or sometimes even illegal. This is a really, really dangerous phase, because you can really make decisions that go against who you are as a person. You can really make decisions that can be very detrimental to your own well-being. You can really just do things that you're just so angry and you're angry all the time. And you may start just actually having what appears to be, could be a mental or emotional breakdown. So that's something that you just need to be aware of, that this rage phase can manifest itself in ways that are just very, very confusing. You're very angry. You're angry one minute, crying the next. And you move from anger, the rage phase, right into the third phase, which is your desire for revenge. This is the point where you're actually the most dangerous because you're not thinking clearly and you simply want to enact revenge upon those that you feel have wronged you. You may start plotting or planning to get back at either the other, you know, woman or the other man or even at your spouse. You want to get them back. Thoughts of revenge move to the forefront of your mind and you start thinking about, you know, really who you can sleep with, how you can hurt somebody or in any ways that you can even the score. And you start looking for ways to bring down your spouse's lover by hurting that person personally or professionally or even financially. This phase will pass, though, and when you make pure emotional decisions that are rooted in pain, they often lead to actions that you later regret. So you've got to recognize when your sister, Teresa, is in this revenge phase. Sometimes this lasts for a little while. Sometimes it lasts for years. But whatever the time frame is, it's just, you know, it never works out well. We've seen so many things in the media where somebody enacted revenge and that person usually ends up in a bigger mess than they ever were before. So that one is a really dangerous phase, but it's really passing quickly and you need to be aware that that is a phase for her and you need to help her get through that one. So that's a really, really bad one. From there, which after the anger and the wanting revenge phase is the letting go of the anger phase. And this is the point where the initial violent, active rage kind of subsides and you're left with this dull ache and this feeling of being totally and emotionally wiped out. This is typically the time you begin to entertain the notion of maybe even getting back together or taking steps to end the marriage, in the relationship. And even though you're deeply hurt, you begin thinking more logically and you're not as consumed with revenge but you're really more interested in taking in a total assessment of your life, your goals, where you'd like to, your marriage to go from there. And you begin focusing a little less on the other man or woman, the affair partner, and a little more on your spouse or partner and the mess that they have made in your marriage. And during this phase, quite honestly, you're simply too tired to fight quite a bit, and you may cry or relive the horror, but not 24 hours a day. This is kind of the beginning of getting the desire to have closure, either one way or another. Either are we going to put this relationship back together, or is it done? But whatever it is, you start thinking a little bit more clearly. So just know that after we get through the rage and after she gets through this desire to have revenge, she'll have periods that, you know, where she's thinking a little bit more lucidly and evaluating whether or not she wants to work on this marriage. And that's why I tell you it's very important to not say anything about you think she should get a divorce unless she asks you, because she's going to get to this self-evaluation phase. After that is the picking up the pieces. If she's planning to put her marriage back together, this is the point where she's going to need complete and unwavering cooperation from the person, her husband. She needs to know that this is going to be a long and drawn out process, which is going to be even longer if he sets up roadblocks to her recovery. It's going to make it much, much worse. You know, if he refuses to answer her questions, things that she has an absolute right to know, if he continues to have contact with this other woman that he met online, you know, if he starts blaming her, you know, it's your fault. You know, you didn't want to have sex every 3 weeks, or you didn't want to have sex every 20 minutes, or whatever it is. You made me feel bad. You ran me away. You were too naggy. Whatever. If he starts blaming her, that's going to take a long time. And if he tells her, you know, I can't believe you're not over with this yet. You need to be over with it. You can't set time limits. So these are the things that are detrimental to the recovery of the relationship, and make it nearly impossible for there to ever be true healing, honestly. So, you know, but if she's not planning to put her marriage back together, this is the beginning of a time where she'll need to start seeking space and time fillers, and not people to just run to on the rebound that you can screw up their lives so you can recover, but activities, things that maybe the two of you all can do together, maybe things that you all can, you know, get involved in together, and you can help her. From there, she's going to move on to the learning to trust again phase. And, you know, that's really difficult, whether you're trying to repair your current relationship or not. This is something that doesn't happen, you know, with anyone else anytime soon, because you need time to heal, to be comfortable with yourself, and before bringing anybody else into your world. So this is a very long, slow process, and it's going to take a while. She's going to be dealing with lots of triggers, things that make her think and remind her of the affair that are very difficult for her to live with, whether it's songs on the radio, places that they used to go, all of this. You know, those are triggers, and they're going to haunt her for a very, very long time. Sometimes triggers last for years. And on a subsequent show, I'll talk about triggers and how to deal with them, because that's a very, very important issue. And if I have a question that comes up this week about triggers. But eventually, she's going to set realistic relationship goals, and she's going to find a healthy new self. Whether it's with this person or without this person, she's going to find a place that she's healthy, that she's comfortable, that she's able to manage her emotions, and that she's able to work through this affair. And it's, like I said, very, very important that you be with her and help her through this. I have this entire thing laid out on my website, which is at ultimatebetrayal.com. You can go under the aftermath of infidelity tab and give her, you know, a link to that so she can understand what the expectations are emotionally, physically, psychologically to help her work through this. I'm out of time, folks. I thank you so much for joining me again, and I will be back here, same place, same time, next Tuesday for The Voice of Reason. Feel free to email me at dbinette@yahoo.com or hit me up on my website. Take care. Have a great week. Bye-bye.